recording. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Acorn Canada Radio, where radio meets justice. Today we're talking to Mavis Finnamore, who is an Ottawa Acorn member of how many years?
Since 2012, officially.
Since 2012. Okay, so 5 years. Mm-hmm. So today Mavis is going to be talking about...
I guess my area of specialty would be the Healthy Homes campaign.
Awesome. So maybe you can start us off with why you're interested in the Healthy Homes campaign.
Well, as I often tell people, I kind of was dragged into Acorn. I actually was approached by an Acorn member about 2 years before I did become involved, and I blew them off, telling them I was happy where I was and I didn't have any problems with my landlord. Of course, that was before my area, Heron Gate, was sold to Transglobe. And when that happened, it's like the bottom fell out of all the repairs and maintenance of my neighbor. My whole neighborhood just seemed to go downhill very quickly in terms of, you know, maintaining the greenery, the sidewalks, the repairs. People didn't even know who they were dealing with half the time to call for repairs. It was a very sort of chaotic time, and because we had so much difficulty trying to get repairs done in a timely fashion, you know, and we tried to perhaps call the city, but we didn't get any, you know, real responses from them. And it was just, yeah, we'll get to you, we'll get to you, we'll call you. And, you know, how long do you want to be there with a broken toilet or a broken window or something like that? It was just kind of chaotic. So it was at that time that Acorn, again, did come through the neighborhood. And, of course, with this situation, they found people were much more receptive to their message. And I was one of them. And got together with the organizers and found out what Acorn was all about. And I thought, okay, this is the only group in town who's taking my concerns seriously. And it's literally the only group I knew of who was taking any of the renters' concerns seriously. I didn't see any counselors when I speak to counselors. So yeah, just phone 311 or phone bylaw or whatever. But even bylaw was difficult to deal with because sometimes you would get a response, sometimes not. So you were kind of left, you know, wondering what the heck to do. So through Acorn, they were talking to us that basically we have to bring our issues to the public. And they helped us organize as a neighborhood. They helped us investigate and sort of document some of the problems that we were having. And we started having our own little demonstrations that would catch the eye of, you know, media. And we hoped kind of shame them into finally getting getting around to doing the repairs. Instead, at first, they called us all a bunch of cranks. They did their best to try and discourage people from coming to us, calling us, as I said, a bunch of idiots who were lying. And this really kind of shocked me because I had never been treated this way before by any group, developers or whatever, because I had never done anything. I was considered a good tenant. As I said, I had been in Heron Gate living there for over 30 years. And as a matter of fact, I know, and I even know that Transglobe did this too, but many of the landlords, when they were wanting to rent townhouses in my area, brought them to my house. Why? Because the whole outside of my house was beautifully landscaped with shrubs and flowers that I put in. So I was being used to attract their tenants. And as I said, I know that Transglobe people and any of the succeeding landlords there did the exact same thing. I was very good advertising for them, despite the fact of what they were doing otherwise. So at first, as you know, we got this, and then we didn't think they were perhaps taking us seriously. So one of the first things that they suggested was, okay, let's do some mass inspections. They got mass inspections going from bylaw. And I actually went along with some of the bylaw officers into the townhouses to see the stuff that was going on. So they were documenting all of these things going on. I think they had, over 500 complaints or something like that they managed to write up. And not just my area of townhouses, but others on the other side too as well. And by sort of presenting this huge amount of infractions to bylaw, they finally got the attention, I believe, of the city. And this is actually something that very surprised me too, because I did not think that there were so many people like me having the same problems. This was a real eye-opener for me, because I thought, okay, maybe it's a few that are behind schedule. And I also thought that because they were a big outfit, that somehow they would be much more efficient and do a much better job because they had much more money to do it. Not true. Not true. Some of the staff that I had to deal with were some of the most ignorant, non-customer service friendly people I've ever had to deal with in any business. And I was shocked by that. And I was also hearing that people were being intimidated into not complaining. In my area in Haringate, there were a lot of immigrants that moved in, maybe had trouble with English and things like that. And they're coming from countries where violence was, you know, present in a lot of cases with authority and things like that, from war-torn areas. So that the idea of them complaining is hard for them to do because they're afraid. And then to have a staff member turn around and threaten you with eviction if you complained, well, that just shut them up entirely. That's why actually Acorn did have some trouble talking with people, because they were afraid. And we kept hearing it over and over again that people were being intimidated by staff. And at any rate, when we took our big load of cases up to bylaw and they started issuing all these work orders, that got their attention. No longer were we cranks, and it got the mayor's attention. And that's one reason why I volunteered to act as a tenant representative. And in my particular area of townhouses, I did my own little inspections outside, unless they wanted me to come in. But I was the one, and I would meet with the managers of, at that time it had moved on from Transglobe to Timber Creek, and talk to them. I said, okay, you've got 50 bulbs down in the underground garage that don't work. You have shingles off at this unit. You have a hole in the pavement at this unit. So I had my whole list, and I was doing my report monthly to them because I wanted them to fix it. And at first they did do some. And then I was noticing that all the other parts of Haringate, because there were apartment buildings too involved in this, they were getting all sorts of repairs done, windows, balconies, what have you. And suddenly they stopped doing an awful lot in my area. And I was trying to ask for timelines for fixing stuff. I practically had to beg them to remove 7 dead pine trees from the interior courtyards because it was a health hazard. All these dry needles all over the place could have caused a fire. Mm-hmm. But I practically had to beg them to do it. And I kept questioning them, and I started hearing the rumors again. I had heard them about 2 years before, that they were going to knock down parts of Haringate. And people were telling me, hey, the staff is saying that they're not going to do any more repairs here because they're going to knock this place down. I went and asked the management. Management says, we don't know anything about that. They denied it to the very end. And yet people were telling me, this is what the staff is saying, move out. They were gradually moving them to another section. And what happened was they stopped repairing some buildings. And they were boarding them up. And, as I say, the maintenance inside, the grass was a foot tall, etc. I couldn't understand how they could get away with this. And I was bringing this up at every tenant meeting. Why are you not doing this? Well, you know, we've got this to do and that to do. And just a whole series of excuses. And finally, of course, in 2015, we got the notice in October, September, October, to move from our units because they were being demolished. That's when they finally waited. They waited till after the summer, which is the best time to go in and get new housing, because that's when the greatest number on the market. They waited till parents had registered their kids in school, and they gave us 5 months, basically, to get out. And again, you're getting the worst choice, the worst prices for moving. More problems, as I say, with schools and kids' programs. And if you happened to be having trouble finding something that cost well, you were running into winter conditions. And if you knew what Harringay looked like at that time, it didn't really have little streets. It had paved pathways all the way through it. There was just one fire lane that went through the middle, and the rest just had paved pathways. So can you imagine what that would be like if it was like half plowed and you're trying to get a moving van in there? It was a nightmare, I know, for my friend who waited till February to move out. He had a terrible time getting out. But it also meant that the things that they offered a moving allowance. But they wouldn't give you that moving allowance until you had signed the papers that you were leaving. And they wouldn't give it to you until you handed in the keys to your place. Which meant that the allowance couldn't be used for first and last month's rent or to pay a moving truck. So here's what I saw that really broke my heart, because I lived there for so long and I knew my neighbors. We had an underground parking garage, and that was wonderful to protect our cars, but it was also where they collected garbage, and it was a major issue, the garbage issue down there. But we were always complaining about them not cleaning it properly. But when we got the eviction notice, people panicked and figured they had to get out of there right now. So what I was seeing every time I went out to the garbage was furniture dumped. And it wasn't bad furniture. It was things like mahogany bedsteads, dining room furniture, what have you. People didn't have the money, because this was a low-income area. They didn't have the money to suddenly have to hire a moving truck and get out and put first and last month's rent. So what did they have to do? They dumped their furniture, and they only took what they could basically cram into their car, their clothes, family pictures, that sort of thing. That really saddened me, seeing all that waste, seeing the fact that these people are low income to begin with. They're losing all of this, the value, and they're going to have to pay even more to try and replace what they've lost now. So, as I say, to me, it was a really cruel blow to low-income people. And it didn't have to be that way. We tried to negotiate with Timber Creek. Give us more time. Give us to June. That way, at least we'd have some advantage to be able to keep the kids where they are, and also to plan better where we're going to go, and maybe even save some money towards being able to get all of this. And they were deaf, completely deaf. They didn't respond to any of our requests at all. And their response was, well, nobody came to us saying they had trouble with their children in school. Why the hell would they go to you? You know, they totally... And here's the worst part. When I turned to our counselors, our city counselors for some help, our provincial counselors, I found them, I wouldn't call them even sympathetic. They would just, oh yes, that's too bad. But you know, that is the law. That's all they have to do. And, oh, you know, or send them to us and we'll see what we can do. But I never heard of anybody getting anything from them. Are they going to loan you money to be able to get a moving truck? I don't think so. And I think that was the saddest part, is they just kind of stood there saying, well, we have to follow the law. Well, F the law, excuse me. These are poor people who could definitely use a break, and you should be able to lean on them enough to give them enough time to get some money together so they won't lose so much. They didn't do it, as far as I know. And the ironic thing was, they were telling us that we had to get out in a hurry because they wanted to start construction in the spring. Well, what a joke that was. They didn't start construction, I think, for another year and a half. They didn't need to push us out like that. And a winter eviction, I really do believe that they should have outlawed that. And you know what stupid comment the MPP said to that? Oh, we can't allow that because then people would stop paying their rent. As if the whole bunch of us were a bunch of miscreants looking for a way to stop paying rent. But to be truthful, they also let that whole place decay. Before I left, there was a couple of buildings right in the core, like about 10 of them, that had been boarded up, left decrepit, windows broken, what have you, and never repaired. They were allowed to be that way with garbage collecting. City did nothing. The developers did nothing. And it felt like a creeping slum at the end. They were letting all of this slide. So maybe we shouldn't have paid rent because we weren't getting what we were paying for. We were paying full market rent. And you gave us a creeping slum. Lovely. And they, of course, there was no penalty for them. And all the onus, all the trials and tribulations were dumped on the tenants. Last to know anything. Fewest timelines to get anything done or get any money together. I mean, really, you were the bottom of the barrel. You were the very last thing they considered. You, client? So what? And this is what really infuriated me. And this is one reason, actually, that I did see the value in what Acorn was doing. Because it became apparent to me, I had never really paid attention to this, that the people who have influence are the people who have money. And the people who have money also have allies. And what happened with low-income people is I didn't see any allies popping up for them. No one at City Hall. No one, well, I mean, the poverty groups, I suppose they could have said something, but they don't have the influence, really, to get things changed, the laws changed. And the only group that I saw that was doing anything in the line of something practical to deal with these people changing laws, providing them with organization to present their case to the public. The only group that ever did that was Acorn. And that's why I have stayed as a member. I actually became the chair of the Ottawa South chapter because of that. I was really touched by the fact that these people were being pushed around by everybody bigger and more, you know, richer than they were, and no one seemed to care, and I felt that someone had to stand up for them. And that's basically why I'm still a member, and we're working on, as I mentioned earlier, a petition to let the City of Ottawa know that people in OCH housing should be having much better repairs and maintenance, and the City of Ottawa actually should be increasing the budget for that so that it's going to be done in a better condition than it's being done today.
Awesome.
Anything else?
Well, thank you, Mavis, for sharing your personal history with landlords.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, are there any actions in particular that Acorn as a group have done to take on these issues with landlords such as like Timber Creek?
A number of actions. When I was Ottawa South Chair, we did demonstrate in front of the Timber Creek offices. And the last one I remember being at was one where, what year? It was last year, I believe, because they were going for an increase in rent over and above, because they had claimed that they were doing all these capital expenses, as I mentioned, balconies and windows and all this. And it was going to be a steep increase. And we had people coming to us saying, listen, we're not going to be able to afford these increases. We said, we're going to be homeless. And our argument, of course, is, listen, people, you have to pay attention to what poor people can afford. If you want to have a law that says they can automatically use their capital expenditures as a way to jack the rent up that's good for them, you have to pay attention to the people who are there and what they can pay. You know, we don't want to create more homeless people. And this kind of attitude of only paying attention to the developer's demands and not paying attention to the other side of the equation of what you can afford, it's kind of ludicrous. You're asking for social problems by doing that. You can't just, you know, support one side of the equation and ignore the other. And that's when we were demonstrating with the idea that when they go to the landlord-tenant board and ask for an increase over and above that, that they should be taking into account if you have people in there who are on fixed pensions, who are on ODSP, for example, or Ontario Works. They have no way of increasing their income to pay for these increases. So, come on, I mean, it just seems ridiculous. You are a huge company, and you are saying you have to put these increases through. I say you probably can put these increases through, but you don't have to put them through in 3 or 4 years. You can put them through for 10 years because your balconies are going to be lasting longer, and you're going to have time to stretch that out before you have to do repairs again to them. But we don't have that in our laws. Our laws allow them to, you know, a short period of time, putting all of these expenses, blam, slamming the tenant with this. It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. And it just, as I say, contributes to more social problems. So that was one issue we were doing. And as I mentioned with Carlington, there's kind of a funny blip in Ottawa when it concerns housing. And I just kind of find it hard to understand in a sense. And that is OCH, Ottawa Community Housing, which is run and supported by the city, for some reason seems to be exempt from a lot of the, you know, rulings and you know, general needs of the public. They seem to have this attitude that, you know, they shouldn't be complained about from bylaw officers. It's almost like, hey, we're giving you this from the city, you should just shut up and like it. We're saying no. We expect them not only to, you know, do the same thing as private developers and live up to the rules, we think they should be leading the way. They should be setting up the best practices. One of the things that really bothered me with dealing with Timber Creek was some of the common areas that we had. There didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason as to when and how you were supposed to regularly clean something. And I was asking them, I said, isn't there a cleaning schedule? You know? No, guess what? It was basically based on whoever complained the loudest. So I became a very big complainer in my particular area with the underground garage and the garbage. I mean, it was just unreal sometimes. And I'd be on the phone saying, get somebody down here. I said, you know, it's spilling out into the roadway and people are driving over it. And I said, you have staff, you can do this. But there shouldn't have to be that kind of behavior. Common sense to me would seem if you want to protect your property, your value of your property, you'd maintain it. There doesn't seem to be this sort of pride of ownership, this, I don't know, just concern even for other people's well-being. That seems to be lacking in some corporations, and that's why, you know, we had the bylaws to get after them, but OCH, as I say, seems to think that they're not in the same class because they're run by the city. So this is kind of our next big thing that I can see, is trying to nudge the city into having better standards of cleanliness and taking better care of their buildings.
Okay, so what does Ottawa Acorn want to see changed? I think you kind of answered that.
Well,
what is Acorn demanding from the people responsible? So, you know, landlords, OCH, Timber Creek, that sort of stuff.
Well, I think the most comprehensive thing we could do is to follow what has happened in Toronto. And we're all part of the same campaign to get in landlord licensing. Landlord licensing is important because one of the things I found anyway when I was dealing with landlords was how little power I had and how unequal the whole relationship was between the landlord and tenant. If you look it up, Google it anywhere, landlord tenant, look at all the different types of articles. What are they all about? Evicting bad tenants. I didn't see anything in there that said tenants should expect quality repairs. Tenants should expect repairs that don't take a year to get done. There was nothing about tenants' rights in there. And this is why landlord licensing really is, to me, the solution to a lot of these problems. Right now, the landlord is king. And not only can he get away with taking his time doing repairs, he can do shoddy repairs. Because guess what? He's the one who judges if the repairs are any good. Not the city. Not you. And we also found out that, or I did, that the standards for repairs in business, in buildings, is different than when you're installing it the first time. If they're coming in to repair, I don't know, a broken toilet in your place, they can put in any old toilet.